This is your go-to podcast dedicated to getting the exclusive scoop from the industry's top influencers that are helping to shape the cybersecurity, audit, and IT governance landscape. Tune in as we dig deep and learn their motivators, explore their industry journey, and investigate their ideas and predictions on what the future holds. This is Isaka's Cyber Pros. Welcome to the show. And now, your Cyber Pros, Dustin Brewer and Frank Downs.
So one of the things that Dustin and I have been talking about lately is that when we're teaching people and so forth, and I get this question a lot, especially in my grad class I teach at night, is how did we, why should I even listen to you? Which is actually what someone's told me. Why do I even have to listen to you?
I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad.
I know, right? It's usually in the first class. Why do I care? I'm like, okay. And Dustin and I both got this actually a lot when we were training back in the government and at DOD, because they don't care about anyone's feelings except, you know, well, theirs or yours. And they're like, why don't you have to listen to this guy, right? And so it's something we're used to getting all the time. But what we have realized is we've gotten a lot more questions lately, and we never talked about it on the podcast, of how we even got into cybersecurity, because everyone's journey is different. So we thought we'd take some time to discuss that this go round. And hey, Dustin, why should I even listen to you? What do you even do? Like, how'd you even get here? Huh?
who even is Dustin Brewer?
Who even are you, man?
I was actually thinking about this recently. For various reasons, you know, I think most cybersecurity practitioners or people in cybersecurity at some point hold their hands to the sky and look up and say, why did I do this?
or clutch their skulls.
Yes. And say, like, why? Right? Or, you know, or cry in the shower while saying why. We all do it. Okay. Everybody. We all know we do it.
Tears are just more shower droplets. So it's right. Saving water.
I've just always been a computer nerd. I started programming on like my old 286 computer on GW Basic using DOS 3.3. I know I just aged myself or dated myself or whatever you want to say.
You and are
I know
so there's some, old.
There so are some old. People who are listening to this who are going, I used, you know, BSD or AT&T Unix back in the 1960s. I get it. I'm not that old, but I'm old enough, I think, for this industry. And I really loved programming. I think I just love that idea of being able to manipulate a system and make it do what you wanted it to do. Like, you could go download software, that's all fine and good, but if you wanted to do something else, you kind of had to program it yourself back then. We didn't have all the freeware and other types of software that we have nowadays. And one of the things that really fascinated me, obviously, was the communication that could happen between two computers. So, of course, back then it was bulletin board systems on a dial-up. I had a 28 K-Baud modem. I actually have a phone call coming in right now on this great thing called the internet. Let me stop that.
Yeah, it's everywhere now.
And so I really got into that whole aspect of it. And of course, with that came this idea of, you know, what else is out here on the what are on these bulletin board systems? How can I actually control this device on the other end of this session? And where can I go? And one of the things that I remember, I remember two books that really kind of meant a lot to me. This is going to sound really weird. One of them was The Anarchist Cookbook, which I know that a lot of people know it for its instructions on how to make IEDs. Now, I had no interest in blowing anything up. I had no interest in really chemistry, to be honest with you, which is kind of what that book gets into. But the other thing it gets into is the modification of consumer hardware to do something else. At the time, it was the modification of consumer hardware on how to manipulate the phone system. At the time, this was called phreaking, right? And so I really got into that. I was like, oh, wow, I can get this like $10 thing from Radio Shack, this $8 component, solder it into this thing and make it give the DTMF tones needed to make AT&T think that I just put 25 cents into the phone. I thought that was just, it was amazing that I could like kind of control this this multi
AT&T listening. You can find Dustin Brewer living currently somewhere in the US.
I never used it in the field, right? It was only for research purposes. But just that idea of doing that. And then, of course, I really got into software as well with my previous example I was talking about with programming. And I really enjoyed, learning about operating systems and all the things you could do with that. And then, of course, how to remotely control those operating systems and all the different things you could do with that. So my introduction, and this is, I was probably 15 years old when I was kind of going through this phase and, you know, the anti-establishment phase, like, we're going to, whatever, like we're going to control the world, hack the planet, you know, that kind of mentality. I think that mentality still has to stick with you sometimes, depending on what you want to go into with in cybersecurity. You kind of have to have, I don't want to say anti-authority, but something along those lines where you're like, I know you said I can't do, I know that sign right there on the door says do not enter except for authorized personnel. But as a pen tester, I'm going to go and enter and see if anybody catches me, right? So even there are still positive things that can come out of that. It doesn't have to be like a negative, only for nefarious purposes. It can also be used for good, right? How about you, Frank?
I never, ever wanted to get into cybersecurity whatsoever or IT. I learned pretty early on in high school. I had the opposite experience you did. I was doing a work study. And at the time, I was doing a work study with for my dad, who was a dentist in town. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with the term work study, it's where you could try and do work, but also get a grade from your high school in addition to, you know, working. And so at the time I was like, well, I want to find out what this whole World Wide Web thing is. this whole internet seems pretty cool. And I'm going to build a web page for my dad. For, you know, the local town dentist. And I got to tell you, it was the worst web page I've ever made.
But you made it.
But I was buying old copies of Dreamweaver. And then, you know, even those first copies of Dreamweaver that went out, right? It was just a glorified, you know, interface to type in your HTML, right? I mean, you couldn't do much anyway. Now, like you said, there's going to be people out there who are going to be like, well, let me tell you that, you know, when these Adobe tools came out, they were the best thing on earth and so forth, right? Dreamweaver changed the game. And yeah. You know what? Cool. Sure it did. You know, for 16-year-old Frank, it just made him realize he didn't even want to play the game. Like, I was like, yeah, I'm coding in HTML. And my friends were like, that's not even real coding, if you ask me. And I'm like, if this isn't even real coding, then I don't want anything to do with this because this sucks. I hate it. So my, you know, interest in those things kind of came a bit later when I did it on accident because I accidentally got into cybersecurity after I spent my whole collegiate career trying to get a job at the Department of Defense. And when that never happened, ironically, through any like internships or anything like that, I got a phone call 1 week before my graduation when I'd given up. And they're like, hey, you want to come in and talk? And so I did. And I found myself a few months later, right after graduation, working in one of the most one of the biggest, most important organizations for cybersecurity before it was called cybersecurity. And that's where I started working specifically in intelligence. And I was so backwards with computers that when I got there, I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I know magic box tell things and have screen, and we call that monitor, right? And that was it. And so I was so backwards that I was like, well, I got to learn something to get better. And they helped pay for grad school at night. So instead of really thinking things through and going, okay, I should do something technical, I went and got a government degree. And I was like, which, by the way, if you have one, I'm glad you have one. I do too. I'm sure. I hope you use yours so much more than I use mine.
You're doing it with your government degree. Like, you're not even doing it for the cybersecurity. You're rubbing your head.
My logic was, hey, I work for the government now. What could help me in this situation? Government masters. So for everyone keeping track at home, these are now two degrees that arguably are not cyber, not even arguably, are not cyber related. One is English with an emphasis in film as literature. There's a few people who are real angry right now hearing that. One of a few that might be my parents. And then there's a government masters. And it ended up being I did not really understand. I mean, I didn't understand cyber until I had been in the field working hands-on and getting, figuring out what I was actually doing about 2 to 3 years into it. And it was then that I was like, holy cow. Oh, okay. I think I like this. I remember sitting down with Wireshark and looking at all these packets. I'm like, wait, it's just a puzzle. It's just one big puzzle.
Yeah.
And for anyone who wants to do the world's worst puzzle, get a bunch of packets and try to reconstruct an entire network topology just out of Wireshark output.
It's the world's best puzzle, Frank. What do you
like? It is.
Although that is the why did I do this.
That's if you're ever wondering, do I like cybersecurity? I'll give you the litmus. Sit down with a bunch of random packets and try to make a network topology out of it. If you find that interesting, you might like cyber. And yeah, that's kind of like how I started getting into it. And then, you know, I then started enjoying it a lot more once I spent more time in the field and started working. Even when I started working with you, Dustin, when we were starting to put together a bunch of different Raspberry Pi and micro devices and so forth, realizing that, like, even back then when we were putting, do you remember that time? And I think we were talking about it the other day when the first Raspberry Pi came out and there was a magazine that if you bought the magazine, there would be a Raspberry Pi in it. But at the time we were TDY for work in Honolulu, and we went, which everyone's going to be like, oh, such hardship.
Terrible place to be TDY.
Terrible place, right? Yeah. We went all the way through, and I made you walk like 3 miles because I misjudged the distance on Google Maps just to get to like a Barnes & Noble, and they're like, we don't have anything like that here. But once we did get those, Raspberry Pis, we were making really fun stuff and really cool things. Like that's how I made my first sensor camera and stuff like that. And that's when I really started getting into, like, you know, and it took a lot of the tactile interface, right? Working with things with the hands and interacting with it that way. That made me really start to like, really like cybersecurity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you bringing up college is a good thing for me to talk about now.
Yeah. I think tell me about your college journey, Dustin.
Yeah. Please. I think you know better than anybody that, my college journey has been an interesting one. I that's the best way to say it, really. I was in college, and I had this want to do the network security thing, but there weren't really any degrees for, like, you would basically have to get your degree in computer science or computer engineering or something like that, and that took a lot of math. And I'm not saying I'm bad at math, but I am saying that I'm one of those people who believes that a computer can do it for me, so why do I need to learn it, kind of thing.
More of a math magician myself than mutician. So,
terrible attitude to have, by the way. I eventually did get through Calc 1 and Calc 2, so I eventually got through that stuff.
Oh, bro, you made it further than I did. I didn't even get past Calc 2. Calc 1, I got to the end barely, and I was like, I think we all know I'm done here.
And so I kind of gave up on college. I did. I got my associate's degree. But again, there wasn't any kind of real, there was nothing for cybersecurity wasn't even a term, let alone a something that academia was adopting at the time, right? And we kind of see that today now. Everybody's kind of spinning up and they have these degrees in cybersecurity all the way up to PhD level, but they're being taught by all these people with PhDs and things like computer science. Computer engineering, and not that those people can't teach it, but it is this weird. It's like was it you, Frank, who told me, like, the first person to give out a PhD didn't have a PhD themselves? If you think about it, like, the first and the first person to give out a PhD in cybersecurity didn't have a PhD in cybersecurity, right? What did they have a PhD in? But my mentality behind that was still like, I really enjoyed computer science and everything, but I didn't want to be a programmer like all the time. I didn't want to be just the network architect. I wanted to be a penetration tester, really. And we didn't know the word for it back then, but I wanted to be someone that people paid to hack, and I wanted to do it legally. So, of course I enlisted in the US military, because they do that, right? And that's actually kind of how Frank and I met up eventually, as I got stationed at Fort Meade, Maryland. And, he was a contractor and I was in the military at the time. And we eventually ended up working together after I got out of the military, and we were working on some cybersecurity projects. And we did a lot of training. We did a lot of creation of content to help people understand cybersecurity, both offensively and defensively. And I think that was, once we got into that training aspect, I think both of us never really got out of it. We still really enjoy that part of it. yeah, it's you know, aside from that, our certifications was another thing that kind of came into play. And this is something that we've talked about on a podcast before right?
Yeah.
I guess I never really finished my college stuff. I did eventually go on to get my bachelor's in cybersecurity as well as my master's in cybersecurity. So it did happen. It just it happened a lot later.
And you got the right ones the first time. So good job, Dustin.
And it happened much later in life, though. Now, certifications, though. Frank, do you want to talk about some of the certifications that you have?
Sure. And so my certification journey was also all cattywampus because I didn't know you were supposed to start with things like A+, then NET+, then STACK+. I talked to Dustin, I think, randomly one day. I'm like, hey, you know any good certifications that like I should do? And he's like, you should do CEH. I was like, cool. I didn't know. I was jumping into like the, you know, deep end. Which is fine, by the way. But
you were already doing Wireshark. You were already doing Wireshark.
Yeah, I know. Like it's fine in retrospect, but now, like when I've given some bad recommendations sometimes to people, where I'm like, "Oh, you're doing well in my class. Yeah, go ahead and get that CEH." And they're like, "Why did you do this to me?" And I'm like, "What do you mean?" And that's why I tell my students. So now, whenever they ask, so to backtrack a little bit, yeah. So just in case everyone's concerned, which you should be. I did end up also then getting a master's in cybersecurity. Let's see, what was it? 8 years after my bachelor's. So it eventually happened. Jeepers, it was actually 10 years. And there you go. There's your jeepers for the day. But whenever my students ask me then now, and for anyone who's listening, and you know, I think it all depends on where you are in your career and what your interests are and so forth. But I always give the answer of someone who has no certs, right? And is new to the field of cybersecurity, where do you start? I always recommend first A+, then NET+, then SEC+. Those are like the magic three for taking you from, I don't know what I'm doing, to the introduction level two, you can be like, I am ready to be, I'm like at the two or three year level of knowledge to be in cyber and stuff like that. Now, we also have some new certifications at ISACA that can give you, in my opinion, a much more robust experience they build upon each other as well. And that's the Information Technology Associates, right, Dustin?
Yeah, yes.
Yes. And so that is also very helpful as well. My certification journey, just to make sure all that's clear, because I don't want anyone to follow me on mine. Don't do it this way. was then Dustin's like, go ahead, take CEH. And I was like, okay. And then I got EC Council's two other big ones, which culminates in Licensed Penetration Tester, which I'm glad we're talking about this because I need to pay my fees. And then I then went on to get other certifications at ISACA, such as CSXP and the CDPSI as well as some SANS certifications. And a lot of people ask about the what are so great about certifications? And Dustin, I think you and I have a similar thought pattern on this. It's good to have formal experience, like your college experience, right? And people will always appreciate that as a great big underpinning of everything else. And they can never take a degree away. So, haha. Because you didn't pay your dues, as it were, but having those certifications shows a level of, you know, initiative as well. So you have the tenacity in the degree program, you have the initiative in the certification program, because once you're in a college collegiate program, you're going to keep going. There's kind of a whole structure and so forth with it. You really have to say, I'm going to go on my own time, take these certification classes or read this book or get spun up on this and then take the exam and so forth. Now, if you're lucky, some colleges or some works will pay for it. And if you go through some of those new cutting edge degree programs, which I really think are awesome, like WGU has, they'll help you prep for these in the actual classes themselves. However, I think they show a level of tenacity, a level of dedication, especially if you're keeping them up, because you don't just get it and then it's there. You have to prove that you're staying relevant in the field. And so those are my certificates. So I said the CDPSI as well, the GIAC, all those. And they're good certifications to have. They're definitely the things that will help you stay in the monster.com lottery through the automated sorting system, as it were, right? Because they always look for certain things first. They're like, let's sort on, do they have a cert? Oh, okay, good. It's getting your ticket punched, right? So you can stay in line, as it were. What are your thoughts there, Dustin? What did I miss?
No, I think you hit it. I think that I kind of felt the exact opposite about it, where I felt like I had to get my degrees to stay in the monster.com kind of, you know, pool of things, because I had all this great experience. I had all these great certifications, but I didn't have the degree. So I kind of had to go back and backtrack and do that. And as a non-traditional student, I think is what they would call me, because I was well into my 30s when I went back to school. It was tough, right? I think that if you can, you know, if you know you want it, this is something you want to do, then and of course the programs exist now, so you can go through and get these degrees done. Afterwards, though, you're absolutely right. The certifications really do prove that you care about the field, that you want to learn more. And I think when it comes to cybersecurity, we all know that you're never done learning, because guess what? The hackers aren't done learning. The nefarious actors, they're not going to stop. They're not stopping, right? They're learning new things about our systems every day. And they're actually showing us some issues with our systems every day, right? You know, and it's a very challenging field, because we still are facing some of the challenges that are, you know, that were around 30 years ago, right? Like the ransomware. Most of the attack vectors there are social engineering, which have been around, again, the dawn of man, possibly, but at the dawn of computers for sure, right?
No, caveman, totally socially engineered.
As far as certifications, I did go a little more traditional route. I did get my A+, I think, when I was 18 years old. My dad actually paid for me to go and get my A+, because he was like, he wants to be in computers. He doesn't sound like he really likes college all that much. Let's get him.
Just a good dad. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Larry Brewer knows what's up.
I'll have to tell him to tune into this episode. And
good job, Larry.
And then from there on, you know, employers paid for it. Obviously, the Department of Defense was big. The 8570, they wanted to make sure that people were trained up within specific areas of being certified. For those who don't know what the 8570 is, it's basically a document that the Department of Defense puts out for different job roles and what certifications those job roles should hold. And what level. I think it might dictate your pay too. Am I right, Frank?
Oh yeah, totally. Okay. Well, they use it to help identify what you should be paid, but there it's more specific to the job roles, but it's, you know, they do the old one too, shuffle.
Right. And one of the ones on there is CEH. So you're welcome, Frank.
Thank you, buddy.
Just trying to help you out.
Okay? Looking out for me.
Yeah, and certifications, again, the one hard part about them is that you do have to, you have to have continuing education. You have to.
Right.
And it might, I mean, speaking of the future, like we might have it eventually where cybersecurity is a continuing ed. You have to, just to keep your license or your other certifications, you have to keep up with the field, right, in order to be a practitioner.
Well, to keep my license, right, and I put it in quotes, but it's actually called the licensed penetration tester. To keep that license, I have to show all the things I'm doing to stay relevant in the field. I have to provide documentation and then pay a fee to EC Council each year. Yeah.
And I think one of the big takeaways from this as well, that I really wanted to, the kind of crux that I really wanted to get to, is that you're never too old. You're never too unqualified, if that's how you want to put it. You know, if you think cybersecurity is something you want to get into, but you've been a historian your entire life, you've been a curator at a museum, you've been a construction worker, anything. If you like puzzles and it turns out that you like doing this, you're never, ever, don't ever discount the capabilities of going back to school, of going and getting your certifications. ISACA has a few. And actually, we failed to mention ISACA's certification.
No, I totally mentioned the ITA. So, don't bring that on me. And on your point, though, the best student I've ever had in my grad class was a middle school English teacher who decided, quote, "I'm tired of smelling them." Her words, not mine. And she was like, "My husband does this whole cyber thing. I want to figure it out." And she hit it out of the park. She did great, amazing stuff, right? And so I really want to hit on that too, Dustin. You make a very good point there, that it is really, it doesn't matter who you are or what you've done in the past. This still might be your thing. And to double down on that, the field is in desperate need. I mean, if you want to talk about job security, cyber's the field right now. and is going to be for a long time. And I think you also brought up another good point too, like where certifications help and degrees help. I would say, and you and I have talked about this a few times, having certifications and degrees really is the one, and experience and being, you know, good at the job, but 50% of doing well at something is just showing up and making sure you're there to do it right. I would say as far as like consideration for employment and so forth, it really is the 1-2 punch, having degrees and certifications as well. I tell a lot of my students who are like, well, I might not stay in this program, I don't need a degree. And the answer is true. You do not. However, I've seen many people in this field who did the not getting the degree thing for a while and hit an invisible ceiling, right? And sooner or later, if you want to be, and in what I've noticed, and this is just anecdotal Frank Downs, I'm not saying, no. people who get stuck at these different, you know, glass ceilings, it's because of the degree and so forth. And once they had a degree, oh, all of a sudden these doors, they're, what's going on here? And a lot of people don't want to hear that. And that's fine. You can have an amazing career without any degree and just, you know, and several certifications. There's nothing wrong with that. You can also have a career with a degree and no certifications, but I don't recommend that at all. The certifications really keep you sharp. You got to have them. So having both of them really is the 1-2 combo that will help you, you know, stand out from the rest of the crowd.
100%. And, you know, nowadays I feel like everybody's looking for, what do you call it, Frank? The purple unicorn?
Unicorn. So
it's the person who can speak IT, can speak cyber, can speak business, can communicate between all three of those places and can get the job done. And that's
you better have the certs and the degree.
That's right. And that's a really hard thing to do, but there are certifications for it, like ISOCA CISM, right? So
there we go.
And ISC squared CISSP, right? We do. I had to plug CISM in there, right?
You can't spell success without CISM. Well, you can, but don't try to. CISM for IT success. There you go.
Thank you, Frank. But yeah, I think that goes back to what you were talking about in that, you know, you're never done learning. And even if you are someone who's technically inclined, you might start to look at the business side of things because, again, business and IT are now in this really weird relationship together where at one point it was business that IT somewhat enabled. And now IT is like the center of everything and development and creation and everything is happening on digital platforms everywhere. And so to understand both sides of the house or all sides of the house, you really need to keep sharp on everything. So branching out, getting a certificate, I'm not saying that you need to get your PMP or anything like that, but that's one way to go, right? To kind of understand how these things work, even if you're in IT. I think CompTIA even has Project Plus, which is,
Do you want to have a lot of software developers angry with you all the time? Does that make you happy? Become a project manager and get your PMP.
There you go. Or whatever.
Right.
Or Agile or Scrum Master.
Whatever
it is, but
you're guaranteed to be on all of those devs' minds every day. Do you not have enough people thinking about you? Well, have we got a solution for you?
Oh, Lord. Oh, boy. But yeah. Are we just going to?
I think the moral of the story here is, I mean, now you know where we came from. Not necessarily saying anyone should do it the way we did it, because it was a really weird trip here. But it is totally worth doing it. And if you are interested in it, I mean, try to learn from us so you don't have the same, you know, struggles. That's for sure. I mean, you don't want years in the wilderness wondering, like, what is cyber in the middle of Fort Meade and all that. As always, if you guys have any questions, you can keep reaching out to us too, because that's we love talking to all of you. And that's how I spend a lot of my time anyway, too, after work, is helping people out, figuring out what they want to do. We hope this helps.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we do hear from a lot of listeners on LinkedIn. Sometimes we get them straight on through the customer experience center here at Isoca, asking us questions about, you know, hey, I really want to get into this. Like, how do I kind of move forward with that? And that was kind of the muse for this particular podcast, because people don't really know, like, you know, who are Frank and Dustin. Like, we do have credentials. You go on LinkedIn and you can look at it. But I think the journey is it's still happening. Number one, like, it's not over. Yeah, we're not dead,
right?
Or retired. Those two things are right, different.
There we go.
Yeah. We're not retired yet. So we're still kind of continuing on with this journey, and we're still continuing. I still learn every single day. It doesn't stop.
I don't even want to learn, and I'm learning by diffusion half the time. Like, my Twitter feed's teaching me so much right now about printer. Oh, to go back to that podcast we had last month, we were talking about printer vulnerabilities. Of course, the vulnerability is literally called printer nightmare. And I'm like, everything with a printer is a nightmare, in my
opinion.
That's
right.
I'm just trying to use a printer nightmare. So you can see, hey, who's the futurist now, Dustin? Hey.
I think you are. It kind of makes it.
Oh, man. There we go.
Let's switch roles. We'll switch roles. I'll be the you and you be the futurist.
Yeah, that's me. We don't even put a designator. But yeah, no. So, yeah, as always, please reach out to us and we'll answer however we can.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode with our cyber pros, Dustin and Frank. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To listen to more podcasts from Isoca, please visit isoca.org/podcast. Don't forget to subscribe for upcoming episodes.